Welcome to SCOTUscast. On June 25, 2008, the Supreme Court decided Kennedy v. Louisiana, holding that the Eighth Amendment bars Louisiana from imposing the death penalty for the rape of a child where the crime did not result in death. In this episode of SCOTUscast, William Otis, former chief of the Appellate Division in the U.S. Attorney's Office, Eastern District of Virginia, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Otis.
The court's decision in Kennedy v. Louisiana struck down a Louisiana law that allowed the jury to impose a death sentence for child rape. The court's most important holding is that capital punishment may not be imposed for an offense against an individual that does not result in death. The majority held that, under the Eighth Amendment, while child rape can be devastating, to punish it with death is disproportionate and therefore, under the court's precedents, cruel and unusual punishment. This clarifies a question arguably left open in the earlier case of Coker v. Georgia that had struck down the death penalty for the rape of an adult woman, but left it somewhat unclear whether that same prohibition would apply to the punishment for child rape. The court's decision now holds that it does. The court's opinion comes down to a declaration that the majority, using its, quote, independent assessment, does not think that capital punishment is ever a just penalty for the rape of a child, no matter, as Justice Alito puts it in his dissent, no matter how young the child, no matter how many times the child is raped, no matter how many children the perpetrator rapes, no matter how sadistic the crime, no matter how much physical or psychological trauma is inflicted, and no matter how heinous the perpetrator's prior criminal record may be. The opinion is so categorical and extreme that former Harvard Law Review editor and law professor Barack Obama has disowned it. He disowned it for the wrong reason, result orientation rather than analytical failure, and thus repeated the very errors that led to the court's outcome. Yet the fact that Mr. Obama disagrees with the result is itself evidence of one of the majority's key analytical failures, that is, its hide-the-ball discussion of a supposed, but actually non-existent, national consensus against the death penalty for child rape. For the longer term, the most significant aspect of the ruling is its view that, while public opinion may change about the seriousness and depravity of certain crimes, child rape among them, change in the application of the death penalty will be permitted in only one direction, and that is to further constrain its use. The majority's key passage is this, quote, "Evolving standards of decency that mark the progress of a maturing society counsel us to be most hesitant before interpreting the Eighth Amendment to allow the extension of the death penalty, a hesitation that has special force where no life was taken in the commission of the crime. It is an established principle that decency, in its essence, presumes respect for the individual and thus moderation or restraint in the application of capital punishment." Unquote. As Justice Alito pointed out in dissent, the court has now openly made its death penalty analysis a one-way ratchet. While purporting to review state trends in capital punishment, The court almost in its next breath effectively declares that such trends will not matter unless they shrink use of the death penalty, in which case they are likely to be found dispositive. As Justice Alito also pointed out, this one-way-only view is inconsistent with the court's previous stance, for example, in Harleman v. Michigan, not to mention any authentic fidelity to the notion that public consensus matters at the end of the day. In sum, the majority's decision confirms the trend on the court, in death penalty cases and elsewhere, to disregard what had previously been the heavy burden the judiciary must bear in order to strike down a democratically enacted statute, and replace that burden with a free-range license to impose the court's own version of decency, as long as breathtaking violations of the decency of the victim are disregarded.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUscast. For more episodes of SCOTUscast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.